And we'll open it up for our gratitude to both of you.
Okay.
So Hazel, you have the floor.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you for the invitation to speak to you, to everyone this evening. I appreciate it. I want to start off by giving you a little background of myself and my personal journey, because it has a lot to do with my experience in Al-Anon. I grew up, I'm an only child. My parents both immigrated to this country. My father's from Canada. My mother's from South Korea. At an early age, I was about 5 years old, my mother had a mental health breakdown and she went back to South Korea. She left my father and I, and my father was a little too old to take care of me. So I went to live with the family in Pacifica. I was pretty shocked. I have definite memories of missing my mother and my father and not understanding what was going on and not knowing when I would see my mother again. My father would visit me from time to time, and he wasn't really able to tell me if my mother was going to come back. And that was very sad for me because I stayed home with my parents. I didn't go to daycare. I didn't have a babysitter. I had a mom and I had a dad full time. Then my mother decided she did come back. She missed us. My parents proceeded to get a divorce. And there was a custody battle. And my mother was provided custody. And it was rough. My mother had to go out and start working as a single parent. I had to teach her Korean. I had to teach her English. So she did not speak Korean to me. So I am not bilingual. That's something I am. I wish I could speak two languages, but I don't. So at 8 years old, my father passed away and I lost my dad. And it was a big loss for me because he really spoiled me. You know, I was his princess. I was a special little girl to him. And my mother was really struggling. I went to 5 different elementary schools. We moved every year. And it was interesting. I was having a chat with my mother a few months ago, and she said to me, she said, "Hazel, how did you know what school to go to?" I said, "What do you mean?" She says, "Well, I never took you to school." And I would find out what school to go to by the neighbors, and I would get to school. My mother never went to back to school night. She never met my teachers because she was afraid. She was afraid if she met my teachers, they wouldn't like me. They wouldn't like her. So she really struggled with her own issues. And later on, she ended up getting married and I had a stepfather, and that did not go well at all. He really didn't like me. I'm a mixed child, and he did not condone mixed children. And he really, for the first time in my life, I was really treated really like a second-class citizen, and I didn't understand it. My mother and I got along well. She worked full-time. I took care of myself. I could cook dinner. I did laundry. We were a team. And this stepfather really, he really shook my world. I was 14 years old, and I went out and got a job, ended up telling my mother that I was leaving home, and made arrangements to rent a room from a friend of mine, her family. And I said, "You know, I am not going to live like this. I am not going to be mistreated and verbally abused. And this is, I just didn't tolerate it." So it was very tough. And then things got a little worse. And my mother attempted to take her life. And so she begged me to come home and things would be better. So I did. I came home and I lived this my senior year of high school. basically, I describe it as pure hell. But I got through it. I earned my money. I left for college last week in August, 1975, and I never came back home. I realized that I had to take care of myself. I had been taking care of myself since I was 8 years old. And it was just something I had to accept. I got myself through high school. I got myself into college. And I really enjoyed my college years. I was in total control. I took my classes. I got good grades. I made wonderful friends. I met this really great guy that I had a crush on. And it really worked out nicely that he also liked me. So it was a wonderful time. And Bart and I ended up getting married. We had a wonderful time. We bought a townhome. We had two children, two boys. And I thought I was really living my dream. I had a wonderful husband. I had two healthy children. They were smart. They were athletic. I was really concerned that they were going to become jocks because Bart was so athletic. He played football. He was a wrestler. So, of course, I introduced my children to music and they played piano and they loved. So they were very well-rounded individuals. And we were going along and I thought I had the world by the tail. I was pretty happy. And then our kids started experimenting with drugs. And my oldest son happened to fall in love with marijuana. He loved it. And so we struggled with that. We tried to get him help. We tried to help him. He tried to help himself. He got himself through college. And we had some rough spots, but we were managing. And then our youngest son came to us when he was 15. And he said, gee, you know, I'm struggling and I'm using marijuana. And he was depressed. He was clinically depressed. So we tried to help him and worked with him. And through the years, like Bart, my husband had mentioned, we had paid for rehabs, counseling, therapists. I went into therapy just because to see what kind of a parent I was, how could I help my sons? Because I just didn't understand why they would be so motivated to make these decisions. I couldn't grasp it. In 2009, we were recommended to come to Al-Anon. So we said, okay, we had also gone to Al-Anon years before when our oldest son had problems and we didn't have a very good experience with their meeting. And so we didn't come back. So the second time we said, sure, we'll give it a try. And I was quite upset when I went to our first meeting because basically I was told that I had no control over this. And that concept was foreign to me because I was in total control of my life. That's what saved my life. And as I'm reading, listening to the adult child reading, that was me. I controlled everything in my life and I survived. And I never got counseling when my father passed away. No one, you know, I made friends every time I went to a new elementary school. I was able to make friends. I got good grades. I went through the entire public school system on my own, you know, as an adolescent, as a child. And I had total control, made a decision where to go to college, where I was going to live, everything. And so to be told that I don't have control over this disease, this addiction, was quite shocking to me. So, of course, I fought it. I'm very stubborn. It's another wonderful quality I have. And anyway, then I was told I needed to get a sponsor. I was like, oh my goodness, okay, I will do that. So I ended up getting a wonderful sponsor, a really patient, very loving woman. And she worked with me and she met with me. We met every week. I went through the steps. I had the hardest time on step three, because even though I have a wonderful relationship with my higher power, I have faith in God. I pray to God, and I know my Father's in heaven with him, watching over me. To give up control to my higher power was a totally different concept for me. And but my sponsor was wise. She sent me YouTube, to watch. She gave me literature to read, and slowly over and over and studying, I realized I accepted step three and went on with the steps. And step three and boundaries were my biggest learning experience with this program. Because once I got the step three under my belt, then we started, I had to work on the boundaries. And that's what I didn't have. I didn't have boundaries. And one of the biggest boundaries I had to set was with my number one qualifier, which my sponsor informed me was my mother. And when she told me that, I was like, you got to be kidding me. She goes, no, Hazel, I'm not kidding you. It's your mom. And I said, okay, I have to go home and I got to think about this, and then we'll come back and talk about it. She said, that's fine. So I did, and we talked more. And of course, she was right. And I had to sit down with my mother, and I had to explain to her that part of my recovery program was to look for people that support me, and to have company with people who love me and support me. And I know she loves me, but her words were not supportive, because she blamed me for our son's addiction. She blamed me for our son's use of marijuana. She blamed me that my son didn't graduate high school. And I had to explain to her, oh, you know, I love you so much. You mean the world to me, but your words hurt and they don't help me. And I want to be able to be strong to help my sons, and that you are not helping me. I can't grow. I can't be the person I am. I can't be there for my sons or for my husband if you're going to continuously criticize me and try to break me down. It's not healthy. So I put her on a timeout, and I didn't see her for about 1.5, 2 years. And it was very hard. And she didn't believe me. She kept coming to my house, and I kept telling her, I'm sorry, you have to go home now. She would come to my office. I says, I'm so sorry. I cannot see you. She came to me once to ask me for financial assistance. I said, I'm sorry. I cannot help you. So she finally got it. And then about 2 years, a year and a half later, she contacted me to ask me to have coffee. And we slowly were able to get on a better fit footing. But I have to tell you, for the last 7 years, my mother hasn't said an ill word towards me. She has shown nothing but love and support. And I have a relationship now with my mother that I had only dreamed of as a young girl, as an adult, and as a middle-aged woman. And I know some of you in this audience heard me speak in meetings about my relationship with my mother and how all I wanted for her was to tell me that she loved me and that she cared about me. And when she started doing this, it was this most wonderful experience. Anyway, and so now I have this wonderful person in my life who supports me, who cares about me. We definitely have different attitudes about how we deal with her addicted grandson and my son. She's definitely very codependent, and I'm definitely not, but it's okay. We still can be together. We can still love each other. We can still support each other. So this is where I feel this Al-Anon program has given me so much, because I have a relationship with my mother that cannot be replaced by anyone else. And then what happened was, as Bart mentioned, we lost our youngest son in 2018. And it was devastating. It was horrible. It was painful, and it's still very painful to this very day. And I remember when I started going to my Sunday evening group, I was really struggling with shame. I was really struggling with guilt. And after the meeting, a woman came up to me and she said, "Hazel, I'm so glad that you're here with us this evening. And we just support you." And that meant so much to me, that hand of support, because at that moment, I felt so weak, so vulnerable. And I knew I had to work on this. I knew I have a journey here that I need to go through. But here I am at the end of this meeting with the welcome and this woman wrapping, you know, I just felt like she was wrapping her arms around me with her words. And that really, that gave me the encouragement. That gave me the hope that, okay, I'm going to do this. It's going to be okay. And what I have found with this wonderful Al-Anon program is that there's kind of like, I feel sometimes I have a reset every day. So every day, yes, I have to sit and read my daily reading. I have to look and go through my list of gratitudes so that I can understand what to be thankful for, what I can understand, what I can value in my life, and the people that I value in my life. So those are the things that stand in front of me. So then when I have the pain of grief, it strikes me in the middle of the day that I have something to fall back on. I have a foundation. I have something that's going to say, you know, Hazel, it's going to be okay. Feels pretty shitty right now. Yeah, it really does. Because I have a sad life. I've lost my son to this disease. And I have another son out there that I hope someday I will see again. I hope someday I'll reconnect. I love him every day. And I know he has his own higher power. He has his own journey and his path. And one of the three slogans that the first slogan that I used quite a bit in my first years was, "Fake it till you make it." I really detested that slogan because I felt it was ingenuous. It was like, well, you know, if you really can't feel it in your heart and you're not 110% there, then that's not right. But in reality, to reset the tapes in your head, to reset all the experiences of your life that form who you are, and you want to make that gradual change to something better, then you do have to fake it sometimes. Because by faking it a little bit, then you feel, oh, I feel that love. Oh, I feel that support. I feel positive. So guess what? I can do the next best thing for myself. So that's a good thing. That worked. The other one was just for today. I realize that all the work we do, tomorrow's another day. It's like a reset. And so even though you had a really good day today, tomorrow you wake up and you say, okay, just for today. So an example is Bart and I are at Best Buy because we got to buy a new pan for our new stove that finally came after 4 months. 4 months, no stove, no oven. Okay. So we're in line and I see the gummy bears and I love sugar. So I go, oh God, I would just love to have that bag of gummy bears. And Bart goes, oh, Hazel, don't do it. Well, don't do it. Why not? It's just, you know, I really want. He goes, oh. And then I said, okay, just for today, I'm going to say no to the gummy bears. And I'm great. It's good. Then we come home and we find out we bought the wrong pan. So 2 days later, I'm back at this Bed Bath & Beyond store. And I look over, there's two bags left of these gummy bears. And I said, oh man, I could still buy that bag of gummy bears. And Bart goes, oh, Hazel, don't do it. I said, you told me that last time. He goes, I know, but you know, it's just sugar. And you know, it's really bad. I go, I know. Don't talk to me about it. I don't want to talk to you. So I said, okay, just for today, I'm going to just let this go. And that's kind of what I do sometimes when I'm feeling going down that rabbit hole, is like, okay, just for today, let me just think of some of the good things in my life. Let me just think of what Kevin would want me to do today. Hold the love and the goodness that he had, Hazel, just for today. Try it. And that really seems to work. That does really work for me. And my last slogan, what I do is let go and let God. And I do that a lot in my volunteer work, in my personal life with my husband. I do that with my grief and just day-to-day things. When things don't go right with what I want, people, expectations that we try not to have, but we end up having, is I just say, I just let go and let God. And I want to, you know, yesterday I was reading The Courage to Change, and Ralph Waldo Emerson, his quote was, nothing can bring you peace but yourself. And I really agree with that. I think with all the tools that we get, the community that we have is so special and so unique. You know, when we go to, we were in Scottsdale, we went to a Al-Anon meeting. It was wonderful. We were in Maui. We go to an Al-Anon meeting. The community that this program provides is so incredible and so special. And we're so lucky to be a part of it. But it really comes down to ourselves, is that we have to have that peace within ourselves. And I just want to thank you so much for letting me share. But really, I want you to thank you for giving me a quality in my life and being able to be happy and at peace with all the challenges that I have. It's really an incredible program, And I really thank you so much for all your love. Take care.